Mishlei. Just an introduction about Chazal saying that the greatest test of our Yetzer Hara, called urge, the greatest test of our urge comes with money and with sexual desire, Gezel and Arayos. And we have to prime ourselves that when that test comes in, the Yetzer Hara is very good at teaching, well, is she married? No, she's probably not married. Maybe she's single, not married, but a man is really technically, according to the Torah, allowed to have two wives. And you know, the Yetzer Hara knows how quickly how to work through that, right? Well, the Yetzer Hara doesn't care. You know, I just do whatever I want, which is really what's going on in the ancient world. So the Torah primes us to hopefully make the right decision for Gezel with certain mitzvot, like letting the loan be canceled because it's a Shemitah year, or letting your land lie fallow in the Shemitah year, or leaving up like a chikra and pay it for the poor, or trumas and maestros and tzedakah. So I'm open with my money. I'm not charging interest. So someone who does all those things is not going to steal, right? Not going to have ill-begotten gains, right? And someone who is calling a rabbi for an answer that might mean I'm going to be away from my wife for 2 weeks. I can't touch her for 2 weeks, right? Is going to withstand the passion of the moment, right? If he was able to step back from it and say, why did I give in to that? What did I do? Why did I ruined her life. I ruined my life, right? My wife is not going to forgive me. Over the years, I've run into these issues. What is he thinking at that moment? Because his urge was stronger than his inhibition.
Yes. Don't we still have the original issue, though? Like, what if you're not going to follow these laws? The Yetzer Hara might tell you it's not following the laws.
Alright, this book is written for people who are following Torah and for people who possibly are not following Torah. But the book works better with someone who is following the Torah.
But isn't that always circular? Like, in order to follow the Torah, you didn't follow the Torah.
In order to be in control of your passions and the Yetzer Hara, the Torah is obviously better served by someone who is in more control. But I think your point is very well taken to a Gemara at the end of the Brachos. So the Gemara says, serve Hashem with your Yetzer Tov, that's obvious, but also with your Yetzer Hara. Know yourself. Know what you are. Know what your strengths and weaknesses are. And we can even, how do you do that? How do you serve God with your Yetzer Hara? Like it's sort of, I might compare it to, let's say, some of these computer companies using convicted hackers to teach them how to, keep their security systems working. Right? I went to jail already. Now, they actually do this. They went to jails and looked for the guys who were in 38 guys who broke into the Pentagon and broke, and then they give them the jobs. And they have to be on guard, of course, when you're serving God with your Yetzer Hara. Right? Because the Yetzer Hara can easily go to the dark side again. You know, get my metaphors here? Okay. Alright, so, and we all actually had, let's go back to Perek Gimel now, open up please. We actually had a pasuk in Perek Gimel. Remember I told you last class that from the beginning of Mishlei Gimel stand two psukim, not one, but two, that made this short list. This list appears in a number of places in Chazal, and if we take all the various psukim that all these places bring up, the number comes to seven. What is the list? The pasuk, single pasuk in the Tanakh that encapsulates the Jewish mission, our mission as Jews. Get that again. The pasuk in Tanakh that encapsulates our mission. So what's in there? That's obviously in there, right? What else might you find in there? B'tzelem Elokim Baruch Adam, God created us in God in His image. Very important. Crucial pasuk, right? Torah Tzivalanu Moshe Barashaki Las Yaakov, that's in there. Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad, that's a big one. So far I'm staying only in the Torah, right? How about this one? This one, at the end of one particular list that contained four pasukim, the Gemara concluded that this is the best of all. Es HaKeves Echad Taseh BaBoker, Es HaKeves HaShani Taseh Bein HaRabayim. corporate tub in the morning, corporate tub in the afternoon. There's no better process than that, Ms. Tucker. Explain?
Like routine or something?
Consistency. Get used to things. Get to it. Because when we are social creatures, we are creatures of habits, and you can train yourself. Your actions will shape your character. Right? Train ourselves to be doing what's right. You are in control. Hashem tells Cain, when Cain is harboring feelings of murder, you can control those feelings. Why does Cain kill his brother afterwards anyway? Did God know that you didn't tell him enough to keep him from murdering? Right? Can everyone in this class imagine telling Cain that unfortunate day something that would prevent him from killing his brother? I just happened yesterday at Central Park to talk to a group of 20 secular Israelis. These are kids between 22 and 26. And they're on this program where they come to America and meet American Jews, leaders, and whatnot. It took me out of right in Central Park, so took me under a tree, beautiful surroundings, and I gave them a shiur on this very issue. And I asked the whole group, they all knew Cain and Hevel, they're very secular, they all knew Central Torah stories, they knew McDuffel. So, and I asked them, everyone come up with a statement that God could have told Cain that would have prevented him from killing his brother. Okay, very creative things. I mean, we, every one of these would have satisfied Cain. So why did God give such a lame, statement that just says, read Sefer Mishlei, you can be in control, I know how you feel. Tell him, Cain, you're the man. I realize how great you are, and I realized all along, but I needed to test you. You're older than Hevel, you brought the Korban first, you're going to have much more than him. You're going to be great. You're going to have Australia and Europe also. And so that's if you didn't remember, I just said Australia. So tell him something that will calm him down. Instead, God gives him a pep talk. So the only way I can have satisfaction from this kind of question is that Cain did listen to God. He did listen to God. He went to his brother. Listen to the very next pasuk. Listen carefully. Vayomer Cain el Hevel Ochiv. Vayehi behiyotam basodeh. Vayokom Cain el Hevel Ochiv vayehargeh. These Israelis speak Hebrew. They knew in a second. What's wrong with that pasuk? What?
What he said.
What he said? Vayomer Cain el Hevel Ochiv. They understood. Vayidaber Cain el Ochiv. That can stay. They're speaking. But when it says Vayomer Cain al Hevel Ochiv, like in English, you'd say Cain was speaking to his brother and then he killed him. But you can't say Cain was saying to his brother and then he killed him. Vayomer means tell me what was said. So why doesn't the pasuk tell me what was said? So Rashi quotes a midrash about the tradition of what was said, and I'd like to say no. The best pshat of what was said is nothing. Cain went to his brother and listened to God. He said, Cain, God told me that I had it within me to do better, right, and to be in control of my feelings. For the life of me, I've been trying to figure out what he meant by that, and I can't. So I'm asking you, my younger brother, what did you do to get God's favor? Can you help me here? And Hevel said, my brother, you taught me well. What did Cain do? What seems to be Cain's biggest trespass in this story? Is that the day he felt, you know, there's a power out there that gives me my crops. It makes my obeyed that the mom makes my work, you know, somewhat successful, even though God had already told Adam, I will curse the ground and you will plant seeds and grow thorns and this is close to the darkness. But I acknowledge that things generally work well when I seed the ground and there's water. And I understand my father taught me how to do this. And it works. And there's a power out there that makes it work. And I would like to gain that harness that power. Right? For help. That's what we do. We do mitzvahs. We do Torah. We're moral. So Hashem says, okay, my Shechina can reside in a place where widows and orphans are not suffering. Because there will always be widows and orphans. We have to have to care about it. So when you're taking care of those people, my shina will reside in your midst, and then when that happens, your crops grow, you have security and protection. But not when you're immoral. Right? So Cain looks to God for the for security and success, which is a very common thing in the ancient world. But he forgot about morality, because part of that success, he's about to kill somebody. Right? But what did he do wrong that day that he reached out to God? We might have discussed this, yeah? What did he do wrong? You have a brother. He works for cheap. Right? Why did he need him behind? You have a brother. He's also working. He also needs success for his job. Why didn't you go over to your brother and say, I have this great idea. Let's bring a gift to this God that's making us, that we believe agree is a great power up there. You understand what I'm saying right now? Why did Cain bring his carbon alone? If he had gone to his brother said, Cain, make a mistake. What are you bringing me free Adama? You should be bringing me righteous free Adama. Right? That's what the Torah calls Truma later on. I'm bringing the Bechor some no Mishelman, right? I'm bringing the choices of my brother. Why aren't you bringing the best of your fruits? And then Cain said, you know what? That's a good idea. I'll do that. Imagine how different this world would be. You with me on this? Right? When you put food out for the chickens, you throw food for the chickens, you see what happens? Or throw food for pigeons? What happens? What do they do immediately? They all flock. They all flock and they flattened over it. Look at, well, I've worked with chicken coop once for a few days in Israel, and they fight over it. They're pecking at each other. And then a minute later, they see there's so much room, they leave it over. It's left over. But when it first comes out, they're all fighting over it. And then they find out there's plenty for everybody. Right? Oh, but that man can behave in the same way after originally fighting over it. All you have to fight for is plenty for everybody. There's enough grain in four states of the United States. It's called the breadbasket, right in the middle of the United States. Right? Nebraska, Iowa, what are the others? Kentucky, and maybe the four, right? You know, not the four that come together to this spot, but there are four right in the middle of the United States that produces enough grain. Entire world. Everybody. Africa. The entire world. Just in those four states. So why are the people who are hungry? Because we're hating like stupid chickens. And we don't stop. If Cain had told his brother, my brother, I have this great idea. But why didn't he do it? What does that show about humanity? We're too competitive. We want to be competitive. Right? Now, there's a story shortly afterwards involving profound cooperation. God didn't like that one either. What story is that? The Bavel. Everyone's got to be exactly the same. There's no greater cooperation unless everybody is Safo Echas Udvarilach Adim. We're all exactly the same. You know what that is? That's North Korea. So, that didn't work either. So, what Hashem does is He gives us a Torah, where we have some kind of healthy combination between an understanding of our competitive spirit, because no one knows us better than Hashem, except maybe our mothers, and that's why everything on Rosh Hashanah is supposed to talk sounds like a mother. The shofar is our mother crying. Every Torah and Haftorah portion of Rosh Hashanah has something about the mother. Everyone, Sarah, this Hagar, this Chana, this Rachel and Yaakov, and every liturgy of Rosh Hashanah is so suffused with motherhood, right? Look in the Yisachar Yaakovson's book on Haftorah's Chazon HaMikra, on the Rosh Hashanah Haftorah, he talks about motherhood in Tanakh. Such a key point. HaKadosh Baruch Hu knows us and created us with this penchant for competition. It's good. Competition is good. But not if it makes you forget those who can't compete, either because, A, they don't have your talent, they don't have your luck, they don't have your connections, they don't have your resources, they don't have your enthusiasm, they don't have your abilities, whatever it is. Right? Help that person. Right? The test of your society is not going to be how you keep Shabbos, how you keep Kashrus, how you're keeping your Kabanos, but how you take care of the orphans, widows, and strangers. How do I know that from Yishayahu, Yirmiyahu, Yechezkel, Amos, Hosea, Micha? Because these prophets stressed the latter 90% of the time. It doesn't mean that they didn't stress the other things. Right? Doesn't mean that rituals aren't important. Just that the Nevi'im spoke to a people who apparently were keeping the rituals quite scrupulously, but allowed orphans and widows to be mistreated. And Hashem is not going to let the Shekhinah stay in such a place. Is it a big chilul Hashem that God lets His temple be destroyed? Yes. The Babylonians, we see in their writings, the Assyrians especially, said, "We have destroyed the God of Israel. Let it be known for once and for all that the God of Israel is weak and powerless, and our God is above it." That's like a chilul Hashem, isn't it? But Hashem says, "You know what? I can deal with that. I'm going to be fine. It doesn't affect me. I'll get even with that in 7 years when I give the Persians more some power, and they'll take care of it." But what is a bigger chilul Hashem than that is when God allows His presence to remain in our midst so that everything is successful, and in the midst of that, widows and orphans are mistreated. Because then that's a bigger chilul Hashem. It looks like that's fine with God. Right? Judaism put into this world is a love for morality. Right? And no one else really stood for that. In an objective sense, I mean, morality included child sacrifice in some countries, even as their king writes in his preamble to his law code, I take care of the poor. Hammurabi writes, "No one shall do charity in my nation." You know, why not? It was because I want to do all the charity. You give me the money, and I take care of the poor. Hashem says, no. I want individuals to do charity. I want individuals to leave behind, you know, wheat and grains and things. Okay? So I just gave you the 5 psukim that appear in the Torah that make this list. Now look at 2 psukim in Perek Gimel of Mishlei. Remember what they are? It says, "Umetzotein pasuk dalet b'seichel tov b'nei Elokim b'adam." This is considered such an important pasuk that it is put into the intervention. If you say the Nimtzochein B'Seichel Tov, but it's a little slightly different. Why is this such an important pasuk that encapsulates us? See it? Mind you get it? See it here? No.
It's not as God, it's also man and
right. Or you know, because we often see, the Jews, but it's possibly also in other religions, not associated as much, but that a scrupulous pursuit of one, finish my sentence, comes at the expense of the other. Seems to me that that's certainly what's happening in the Muslim world right now. Following? Plus, you know, there's another simple chak to this. Every mitzvah ben adam l'chaveiro is also a ben adam l'makom. Don't you agree? Who told me not to steal? Who told me not to speak Lashon Hara? Who told me not to take all the grain from my field, not leaving the poor out? That's also a bit been a dhamma makom. Right? Everything has been a dhamma makom in our system. You got it? So what we often see in religions in the world is that the pursuit of one comes at the expense of the other. Never I see it the other way also. People who are more morally attuned, and our people are certainly that. Why did Jews flock to communism, even though it was so detrimental to the Jewish mission altogether? Why did Jews flock to it? But you see the history of all the people imprisoned or were killed in the 50s, 40s, and 50s by this country because of handing over secrets to this former Soviet Union. Jewish sounding names. It's a West Side couple, Alfred and Ethel Rosenberg. You know, to this day they still have some defenders, but they did what they said, what it said they did. Whether the Russians already had their secrets or not, it's questionable. It was a firm couple. They'd be so naive. They had kids. Their kids were on the West Side. I know people today who remember those kids. I don't know if those kids are alive anymore, but they were sent to the electric chair. Couple, West Side, from couple. How do you figure this?
Did they didn't want to be executed on Shabbat, right?
Something like that. Okay. Well, there were guys in Murder Inc. who wouldn't kill on Shabbos.
What was Murder Inc.?
Murder Inc. was a big guys in the Prohibition.
They're Jewish?
Of they don't kill on Shabbos.
Do you kill on Shabbos?
We don't kill on Shabbos. They justified what they were doing otherwise, but they don't kill on Shabbos. We don't have Mogreen, what's kind of name it's in. Anyway, Mayor Lansky, those are old names. They kept their even the Yiddish names. So something crazy is going on in that head. Alright, but there's something in the Jewish DNA that made them, they wanted such a, because socialism has a liberating notion to this. Cross and draw the Chol Yoshevei okay, liberty throughout the land, is that whatever system tries to help man, there'll be Jews behind it. Right? But did they realize where that was going? They realized how ruinous communism would be? Communism has, in the former Soviet Union, has likely had more victims than Nazism. We all know the number 6 million, right? Communism has made it so that there are much more than 6 million Jews lost. The descendants aren't even Jews at all. We learned that Stalin had a plan to just take all the Jews out of Russia and just drop them off in Siberia if you're on your own. Wouldn't kill them per se, but that would probably kill them anyway. Just drop them off, whatever they are. Just take a train there and drop them off. Right. Anyway, the Jews have this sort of natural sense that even if they're not religious anymore, but they want to do things that are liberating to other people. Okay. All right, so that's our hope that Pasuk Dalid will teach us to be scrupulous on one end and not have it come at the expense of the other end. Why can't we be Mitzachim Mesechel Tov and Elokim Me'adam? I'm sorry to say my experience is that it does happen even today. The community that is scrupulous about Ben Adam L'makom, somehow, and it says B'nei Elokim V'Adam, it doesn't say it's B'nei Elokim V'Yisrael. Somehow they're less than scrupulous about relations with Gentiles, right? Or Jews who are not from. I don't mean to make a blanket statement on this, it's not fair, but I've seen it. And the Jews who are so firm of their, scrupulous in morality, somehow, don't they little lax or not concerned at all on the other element. That, I know that exists, the humanism, Jewish humanists. Okay, and the reform movement in general. Who's the reform movement's champion? Isaiah, Yeshayahu, who says, I don't need your kabbalas. Kabbalas for them was like the quintessential ritual. So we don't need God does more rituals. He wants you to take care of morality. So they just left it all. Rituals didn't matter at all. God cares more about morality. Until Yeshayahu, he cared about both. But Yeshayahu teaches us that he only cares about morality. And that's disingenuous. There was a reform leader who took them to task on this. I shouldn't say reform leader. He was a reform Jew. He was an important Jewish writer. He's still alive. His name is John Podhoretz. He's a son. No, his name is Norman Podhoretz. He's a son, John, who is a syndicated writer. Which we met him recently. So these are people who are Ohevei Yisrael. They're not, they're certainly not we call them observant Jews, but Norman Podhoretz rebuked the reform movement in an article called, in a speech called Learning from Isaiah. It was given at Temple Emmanuel as the reform movement.
That's where that's where also Nan's funeral.
Yeah, she was there, of course. So it was, and she had, the speech in the article is about rebuking the reform movement for using Isaiah as their, the chief, as their main inspiration for their direction. So because if you look at Isaiah, 10%, 15% of the book is also by rituals. He didn't neglect rituals. Right? ask me, and I'm an Orthodox rabbi for the congregation, a large congregation, most of what I do to feel Jewish, to feel religious, happens outside of the shul. Not even necessarily in a ritualistic sense. Right? If I take up a mitzvah child, a bus mitzvah child to someone's house to bring them some cheer and to do some work in their house, to get a program where, you know, there's some people who need work in their house. They're not even capable of taking care of their mail, or taking care of their bills, or taking care of their cleanup for Shabbos. I mean, and there's a bar mitzvah, we go to the house, of course, with permission, we set it up, and then we clean up their house, and we set the things in order, make it ready for Shabbos, set the table for them. So it's a beautiful thing. That makes me feel more religious than Shaking the Room in Israel. Not that I'm not oblivious to Shabbos. I love Shaking the Room in Israel. I feel so close to Hashem. But, I feel closer when I'm doing it. And when we take a picture of the day, we didn't, publish it. Just give it to the bar mitzvah kid. And we take a big look. This is what we did. Right? It's so thankful. That is a religious experience. It should be. Right? But if you feel that, it doesn't mean that Hashem doesn't want you to.
Is that my answer to the previous thing about Does that tie into the thing about being
Adam Lach? So, my understanding is that Kadosh Baruch Hu also loves that. You know, you don't have to be a Hasidic Rebbe. You know the Hasidic Rebbe who missed Slichus. Why? Because what was he doing? He was chopping wood for an old lady. It was cold, right? It was high up in Europe where it was already cold at this time, I guess. But remember, in the guy who doubted the Rebbe. He went to check up and spy on him. Where's he going on the night of Slichus? He went down into the forest with an axe, and he saw him chopping wood for this lady, and he said, "Oh, this Rebbe is higher than the highest." Because Yud Lam and Peretz, it's originally told in Yiddish. So it's okay. Is it a little bit proper to miss Slichus to chop wood for an old lady? Probably smarter to just do it earlier in the day.
But it's also like stories about like the Rob's wife, I didn't cut her hair, but like then, you know, get involved.
I think it's a different idea, right? But I think we have to balance, as we see from many Gemaras, the Mamre Chazal, we can't just decide on our own, you know, what's worthy to do. That's Chachamim, that's Torah, but we'll often see that we can balance Seichel Bnei Elokim Be'odam without having to make a cheshbon. How is this taking from the other? The chiddush I'm trying to tell you is that when we are helping Adam, that's also Ben Adam. Chaim Brisker. Now, my favorite story is that because it was in the summertime, it was hot, and he passed in the chumrah that one of the students that fasted. And the student died. So that's how I heard how this started. Because the Brisk Yeshiva was apparently very lenient on fasting. On the fast days. On Shiva Thomas, Sir Tevis, Shom Gedalia. On Tisha B'Av, they're a little more machmir. And then even on Yom Kippur, Chaim Brisky used to give so many leniencies for those, you know, slight. Things that might be subject to Kuruch Nefesh, and things like that. And when he was asked about this, he said, "Why are you so making on Yom Kippur?" He said, "I'm not being made on Yom Kippur. I'm being machmir on Hilchos Pikuach Nefesh." Following, you can say you're making on Hilchos Yom Kippur, but he said, "I'm being machmir on Hilchos Pikuach Nefesh." And then for this person, it's Samalukim. It's just an important thing because that's what was one of the other psukim we said before about that. Big seven of Sukkim is that man is created in God's image, and therefore there is something inherently holy about us. Right? Now we can, by dint of our actions and our decisions, become profoundly unholy. And the more holy you are, the more potential you have for unholiness. Right? A Jewish body is more tummy than a non-Jewish body. You know that? A Jewish corpse has tumma that a non-Jewish corpse doesn't have. Jews were asked to polemicize about this. What do you think we're less holy? So they gave some fancy answers, but but for instance, a human being is much more tummy than an animal. I mean, an animal cannot be tummy while it's alive. A human being can. But anyway, there is a, we can take this for the Jewish ideal is that a body is much more valuable than anything. Soloveitchik told a large group of rabbis right after the Six-Day War that if giving up the Kotel would save Jewish lives, he would say that that's halacha, that's what you have to do. Of course, it wouldn't do it, you know, the prestigious society, which is which. But nothing stands in the way of Pikuach Nefesh. So you're going to say, well, actually, there is one thing that stands in the way of Pikuach Nefesh, is killing someone else or Yulia Rios. Well, that's because those two things are like killing. Why should you kill someone else to save your life? Maybe his blood is redder than yours. Right? So, okay, there's a third one.
No.
About Zara. So that's the question. Why don't you let this person just worship the God and in his heart say, I'm not really doing this. I'm only doing it because I'm being forced to. That's a deep question in the context of this, and I don't know what I can't really pursue right now. It's an interesting question because human life, because you're in God's image, is such a crucial element. So why do we have to give up the life of Abu Zara? Well, that's because it's in God's image. Once you worship Abu Zara, then it's as if though you're not in God's image anymore. I don't know. That's a topic. It's a difficult topic in itself. I'm not going to pursue it now, but yeah. So let's take a question. Yes.
Yeah. So you were saying before how you know, Jewish people value life like so much, and how a lot of ancient societies they claim to value life. They really didn't by their actions and whatnot.
Yeah, when you slaughter your firstborn child to your God so that he will give you success and more children, that's a moral issue.
So, but what about people who claim like Rishonim? So that's like just
claim that Rishonim is also a moral breach or a human bodily breach?
Is
the Greeks thought so.
Is that, I mean, the Brazilian, like a caring society wouldn't implement such a
thing. Right, so, because if it is shown, as the Talmud says very clearly, if it is shown, like the Perka Aurel, the second Perka in the Seches, that to have a bris is damaging for this person, harmful to this person, you're not allowed to give him a bris. He's still considered an Aurel. He still can't eat Korban Pesach, but he's not allowed to have a bris. The Rashi refers to the case is that a brother of his died while having a bris. They were quite aware, they call it hemophilia, that there was a disease, a blood disease, where that goes through the brothers. And we all know that hemophilia and things like colorblindedness because of the nature of the chromosomes, because this boys have only one X, the girls have two, that the incidence of hemophilia goes much more to the boy. The only way a girl can be hemophiliac is if her mother and her mother is a carrier and her father is hemophiliac. That's where she can become hemophiliac. But a boy can become hemophiliac even if it's only his mother is a carrier or his father is hemophiliac. You see those charts with the X and the Y, 25% chance, 75% chance, 100% chance. But I'll tell you this, if the mother is a carrier and the father is hemophiliac, every boy will be hemophiliac. Everyone, he has no choice out. So, but the mice, I don't know, if someone's listening to this, maybe I'm wrong about this, that's if I recall my biology. So the Gemara was aware of this and said that a boy whose brother died having a bris may not have a bris because the human value of life much higher than the risk. Why do we mainly the poor kid? Well, our empirical experience shows that these boys do fine. Within 3 or 4 days, they're fine. And then add to that all the science that is saying, now risk is back up. Have you heard it? Because my lifetime has gone up and down, up and down. And those who have websites that they're trying to fight against it, right? So it's going up and down. So now what I read is that it's back up. The incidence of certain cancers for men and women with whom they're associated is affected quite so. Now the question is, should there be anesthesia or not? I know, but
I love it. It's the first time I've said that. Anesthesia.
So there could be a lot of reasons not to allow it because anesthesia causes more problems than not.
It's very scary for a baby.
But I'll tell you this. There's a great story. I converted someone from Yugoslavia. That's what the country used to be called. Now it's Croatia and Bosnia. Different countries are carved out of Yugoslavia. At the time he converted to Judaism, his mother, who was not Jewish, of course, that's what he needed to convert. His mother was very much against the conversion because it involved circumcision. He asked his mother what he was, what's her objection. She said she remembers as a child in Yugoslavia that the authorities stopped men in the street, pulled down their pants and their underpants to see if they're circumcised. Right there in the street, you see grown men who being thrown put in the street and they're being examined. And if they were circumcised, you have to take them right off. Nazis, in Yugoslavia was the only one place that enacted those laws before the Nazis came. Another place. When the Nazis took over, okay, our policemen will check out the Jews and we'll go hunt down Jews for you. So she remembered that men were examined in the street and were carried off, and I don't want you to have that ever in your life. So this is what he told her. Mom, I have a beard, I wear a yarmulke, and I have tzitzis out of my pants. They will know I'm Jewish long before they check for my circumcision. He's very, so into it. Baruch Hashem, yeah, he's still keeping in touch with me. He has a large family. Okay. So he said, we're not going to have to wait for my circumcision to figure out, you can shave, you can take off your arm, you can take off your scissors, but that you'll never be able to take off. So he goes, Mom, this is on my door. They're going to know him. You know, all my information well before they have to do that on the street. So, anyway, I digress. So, this, understand what I say about Philip Kimball. Next, the other pasuk is the Cholder of Pelchataheil. Pasuk Vav, it's a beautiful pasuk also. And that we discussed earlier today. The Cholder of Pelchataheil. Remember God, even with your Yetzer Hara. Serve God even with Yetzer Hara. Know what your Yetzer Hara drives you to do, and use those experiences, right? Use those experiences to help you. Now, I collect Haggadahs, and I once gave a shiur. This is the whole shiur. It was four pictures of the four sons, what they look like. You see pictures of the four sons, tumbling like this. So I found the Haggadah, where the Chacham's picture is a kid sitting over a sefer, and the Rosh's picture is a kid who's wearing tzitzis but playing basketball. Shooting a basket, and he's wearing tzitzis even. So that's the editor of this Haggadah considered that's a Rosh. So I said, others with it, the Rosh is a man with a goatee. He's doing business deals. It's really crazy. Right? So why am I telling you that? So I have a friend that no one's going to figure out hopefully from this moment, say, who is a great basketball player in high school. Today he's a Rosh Hashanah. And I spoke at an event of his where I was introducing him or speaking about him. He said, please don't talk about my high school years. I was also in that circle. And I said, you know what? That's all part of you. You have to serve Hashem with everything you've ever done. I mean, there are people who are who travel around the world. I'm finished with him now, but people who travel the world and use it. They were in Hollywood. I had a guy who was speaking in my show this past Shabbos Shabbos, who was the producer of the Rocky Horror Picture Show in England for like 15 years. You probably don't even know what that is. Does anybody know what that is? Crazy, crazy show about trans guys. Crazy show. And he was the producer for 15 years. That was a long beard. He is brilliant. He had everybody in stitches and shell shows. He went overtime already and he says, do I have any more time? He said, yeah, 4 hours. You know, I guess keep talking. We want to use it until Monday afternoon. Right? Because he wasn't afraid to use his past experiences to help us with our own struggles. Who doesn't have any struggles? Right? So that's what's called B'chol Drach HaChot Da'elu. You know, everybody's got a peckle at the back. It's true, you're not supposed to remind about Tshuva of his past. That is true. Because that would be onus to harm on my part. But if the Baal Tshuva himself isn't afraid to say, you know, I remember how lobster tastes, and it's such a, it's the best thing in the world. And I, for me, it's a difficult thing. Every time I pass a red lobster, I have a test of my religious fortitude. I don't have such a test. To me, the lobster is a grown cockroach. It is. It's an evolved cockroach. Same biological genus as a cockroach. But so for me, I have no desire for it. But some people have a desire for it. That's why Kodesh only Kodesh Baruch Hu knows how to reward, punish people for following and not following. So that is B'chol Drach HaChot Da'elu. If I convince you, please, that to know yourself, especially Rosh Hashanah time, help your mother find you. Your mother is the voice that comes out of the shofar. Mara says it's supposed to sound like a Betzi Abeyim V'Eim Sisra, right? Your mother's mother, Rosh Hashanah, says it's supposed to sound like a woman crying. Just a suffix of how she cries. Right? Does she cry, you know? That's the true one. Kia is not crying. Kia is just a straight sound. Arctic shoulder, true, the Gemara says. But the true, we're not sure exactly. So we do three different ways. One, two, and then one, two together. Right? We don't do two, one together because the Gemara just says no one cries that way. So that's don't be afraid to put your whole derech out there as long as it's serving Hashem. Right? Pasuk Zion. Don't be such a wise guy. Right? What do you mean? Who's being wise? What does this mean? What do you think he's talking about? How is he being wise? Don't try to outsmart Hashem. Right? Don't think that you can come with your own chokhmah to the final product of what you need to be. We talked about it, I think, a week ago about Alcoholics Anonymous and our disagreement with their program, that they feel that you cannot accomplish what you need to do here to get yourself out of your hopeless dependency. You cannot accomplish what you need to do here unless you give yourself over to God. I mean, it was very Christian at the time, but they realized that Jews also might want to come, so they just said God, right? Don't give yourself over to God, it won't happen. And that's a very Christian idea. That the human being is hopelessly sinful, and no matter how hard you try, you will not reach your stage that you need to reach as a human being unless you give yourself over. You believe that. We don't believe that. We believe that Mashiach won't come until we perfect ourselves. They believe, man is hopelessly wander away and wallow away into oblivion and sinfulness unless you profess belief. And not only that, if you profess that belief, everything you've ever done in the past is wiped out. The confession is also confession. How could that be? What a pitiful, childish approach to religion. Right? Excuse me, I know it's a... But you just have to grovel before the king and then have walls forgiven. What about the hurt you do to other people? What about trying harder to?
That's maybe that's Christianity. That's not Alcoholics Anonymous. They're not saying like you give yourself over to God, and then, you know...
No, no, that's not what you have to do. No, of course you have a card, that's what you hear at this meeting. But that you will never finish what you need to do unless you get help from above. Is that...
Don't we not have
the
that?
The same on Rosh Hashanah?
Don't we say, like, you know, without God's help, then, you know...
Yeah, is that what you're saying right here?
We can't really...
I am saying that in your sense of what we need to accomplish as our mission, we need the chokhmah of above. Our actions might be something different. What I'm saying, we need.
I think this is a pasuk that you're more familiar with. Gracious chokhmah yiras Hashem.
But I'm willing to admit, that's why I'm talking about this here on this pasuk, is that this pasuk is saying, don't be such a chacham in your own eyes, is that you may come across something which is morally questionable. And I just thought that coincidentally, I was doing Gemara today in Masechet Yuma. I was doing Masechet Yuma up to Yom Kippur, Masechet Rosh Hashanah to Rosh Hashanah, and I'm up to Daf Chaf Beis where Shaul is questioning God about the destruction of Amalek. I'm going to have to table this discussion right here. You want to look at the Gemara's Daf Chaf Beis. And Hashem tells him, Al Tehi Tzadik Harbe. That's what's in the Torah. Here it's about the Chacham Harbe. I think that the destruction of Amalek is a difficult situation for us. What did they do? What Amalek did was 400 years ago, God. So, I'll admit the following. The story itself in Shmuel and the command to wipe out Amalek is morally questionable to me. I have a problem with that. No one's saying today that Goebbels' grandchildren should be killed. We should take our own vengeance and kill them. I say this about Goebbels because apparently Goebbels' grandchildren, I think it's either Goebbels or maybe it's him, one of the real big top guys, his grandchildren today are all over the Israel, and one is even married to a Jew. I think she converted to something. They visit Israel, and they're all putting Germany's feet to the fire about putting up memorials for Jews and the like. I don't know if it's going to be all Goebbels' children were killed with him, or they didn't survive the war. There might be some one other real big shot, like three or four times, one foreman name, one of the three or four top guys at the time. Probably Google and figure it out. But anyway. Just because they're descended from them, you have to kill them? It can't be, but that's what it looks like in Sefer Shmuel. But so that what I'm trying to say is that you can't read a story like that, just reading the story. You read the Gemara's. But then one of Shalom, the new Torah of the Nebrach, the Gemara says, if Haman's sons want to change from Haman and want to be something different, right, then of course we're not commanded to kill them. They can join us. You know what I'm saying? It's obvious. It's only when Amalek is behaving like the original Amalek, then we have a command, and I think that's an important thing. While the world is equivocating over ISIS and this and that, we call evil and it's evil. Evil has to be confronted. And if you don't confront it, it'll just kill more and more innocent people. Right? So I think that's the point of Amalek. But anyway, so we'll have to discuss that further, about the limits of our chachmah and possibly the limits of our own understanding of what tzitzitkus. We have a similar understanding that without God's input, we might be left out. Okay, so.